You're not tempted to come back to Pontefract then?
I go about as often as I can. Yeah. Visit family and friends and what have you.
Yeah. Oh, well, really nice thing. Look, on the railways, I think we've got to have more public control, because you've got the East Coast Main Line that, you and I both have travelled on a lot. It was just, the East Coast Main Line, having gone through a whole series of different problems, ended up really getting itself sorted out. But it got itself sorted out under a publicly owned company. And then the contract's up and they're not allowed to bid. That's just mad, because the French-owned company's allowed to, the Spanish-owned company's allowed to, but the ideology of the sort of the whole Tory approach meant that, no, this has got to be a whole private sector contracting process. So I think we've got to go back to having, two things. I think partly having that publicly owned company, I think, has to play a really strong role in the railways. And also, I think we've got to change the way the Network Rail runs and have a much stronger public control there as well. So I think there's a series of things we could do that could improve our railways, the way in which it was fragmented, the way in which it was privatised very many years ago, has continued to cause problems. But we've also got to have a sort of long-term view, not just about the railways and the roads and things like that. I would also actually think about, in terms of how we support things like broadband infrastructure, things like, the digital infrastructure and all of those sorts of things that we need to support for a modern economy as well. It's probably about how do we pull our party together. I think this is really important, and I do worry about the fracturing that's taking place at the moment. I do worry, and it's why I sort of talked earlier about, we've got to, we can't get into a process of fighting ourselves and looking inwards as a party when there's so many people who depend on the Labour Party and depend on a strong party to campaign against injustice. And I think it's, it's not just about, I talked about us not just veering far to the left, not just veering far to the right as a party, but being confident about our values that we have always had in the Labour Party, that I think we should be able to reach out and include people in the way that we've always been a broad church. You remember, we had the Methodists and the Marxists, we had the Fabians and the trade union movements, the Christian socialists and the cooperative movement. The reason all of those movements came together when we founded the Labour Party over 100 years ago was because actually everybody was fed up of losing, and fed up of losing in Parliament, fed up of losing in the courts, fed up of being unable to change the world for working people, fed up of being able to get employment rights, fed up of being able to get proper protection in the factories and in the steel industry and the pits. And that is what I think we have got to do again, is remind everybody of why it was we came together in the first place and who it is in the end that we're standing up for. And I think we can do that, but that is one of the reasons that I am standing, because I believe it's so important to be able to pull people together. Jill's point finally about what do we need to do, because you're right, it does go much broader than the 0 hours contracts. You see the wider kind of exploitation rules not being, employment laws not being followed. That's been made harder by the introduction of the tribunal fees. Harder too, as well, I think trade unions, I've been sort of steeped in trade union values and so on because of my dad, but I do think there's a lot of sectors where trade unions are not reaching into at the moment as well, and we need actually people who need trade union support more than ever, and so we've got to do more there. But I would go further in terms of strengthening both the law and the enforcement. I would give local councils much stronger enforcement powers around things like the minimum wage and other areas around employment law, rather than it just being left separately. I would extend the gangmaster's licensing authority, and I would also make exploitation a crime. It shouldn't just be an employment abuse. Actually, in those worst cases, it is modern slavery, and we should actually make it a criminal offence.
Okay. So I'm going to take you.
Alan Munton, in Plymouth since 86, in the West all the time before that. I want to begin from the position of the broad church that you mentioned, and the way you opened describing the kind of debate that goes on in the Labour Party. But what I've got to say really is that I'm not entirely happy about the way that debate is conducted. And we sit here, we're at the end of the line, literally and metaphorically here, and I hear you say about Jeremy Corbyn's thing, which is possibly dodgy, I agree, he wants to use quantitative easing, printing money, in order to do certain things, but there's certain things that he wanted to do was infrastructure. And when we hear the word infrastructure down here, we think railways, if nothing else, right? So that concerned me slightly, and you've criticised that position of his before. The other thing was that someone here, everybody here, will be voting for each of the four candidates. Andy Burnham was down here recently, liked him enormously, and so on. But I noticed that one of your people earlier this week said that he should step back or move back, and then I think you withdrew that statement the following day. And I'm just wondering, and I think possibly people here too are wondering, if this is the right way to conduct a debate. Your collective unity, when this is all over, you will still be the four most important people in the party. And we want you to work together, because we don't see these divisions. And I'm picking up that people do not divide their politics these days so much, and I was listening to Woman's Hour just now, on that left-right thing. People go for policies. And if Corbyn comes out with something that might help us with the railways, then we're liable to go for it. If Andy Burnham says the things that he kindly said when he was down here, we're liable to go for it. You know? And we don't understand when people start saying, oh, I'm not going to be on your shadow cabinet. You know? We want unity and we need it. And I am concerned about the way the debate's being conducted.
Nigel Warner from Ulverton. I had the honour to actually see yourself being grilled by Kevin Maguire at the GMB Congress in Dublin. Now, it was quite funny because some of the things he asked you, can you say yes or no, and not one of you could, but that's a politician for you. But my question is concerning yourself, if you were to get the leadership party, the Labour. Now, there's a lot of people that are talk to myself concerning the job that I'm actually in. The fact is that if you get in, it'd be great, because some of the ideas you're coming up with would be quite good. But the fact is, how do you portray yourself to the women, because a lot of the women have been put off because of the Thatcherism. And that's the point that a lot of people have been talking about. The fact is that you get a leader of the Labour Party becoming the Prime Minister because of what Thatcher has actually done.
Hi, Bethany Lowe recently moved to Plymouth. It's great to hear your comments about not wanting to go further down with privatisation into the NHS, into the railways and so on, and possibly even that you might want to pull back on how it's gone a little. But my worry is that under the possibilities of the Transatlantic Trade Partnership, the TTIP, actually pulling back from privatisation, if that goes into place, will become impossible. So that if the Tories privatise things, we'll then be stuck with it. Are you then at all inclined to try and oppose those aspects of the TTIP so that we don't have that worry?
Okay. So start with Alan's point about the what is the challenge for us to have this debate and an honest debate and still also respect each other and respect each other's values. So I am not criticising anybody's values or also their commitment to the Labour Party. And some people have. Some people have kind of got into that whole thing, and that's something I, you know, strongly reject as part of the polarising that I'm worried about. Because I think all of the candidates actually have incredibly strong Labour values and also commitment to the party. And actually, I like them all very much as well, in terms of personal level. But I also think you have to be honest about the issues that you disagree on. Otherwise, what is the choice for the party? And if we don't actually say, look, do you know what? We have some disagreements about Europe. I think we should be part of Europe. Actually, Jeremy doesn't really. And he's, you know, he thinks we should just have a special conference later on and maybe then decide it at that point. I think my just strong belief is that we are an internationalist party. We should be part of Europe, part of NATO. If we don't have that honest debate, then I just think I'd be letting party members down if I was pretending that I agreed with everything that everybody else said. When I don't, and I also think it's going to be important for the future of the Labour Party if we go down the wrong track. Mm. And I think it's important for the future of the Labour Party as well, not just on the policies, but if we can't win, if we can't reach out and win and be able to stand up for people across the country. So, look, and that's why, and I think my problem about the quantitative easing, it's not a commitment to infrastructure. Of course we've got to invest in infrastructure. And actually probably where Jeremy and I agree is on the we should have an alternative to the 40% cuts that George Osborne is pursuing. And other people have disagreed with that. Other people have said, no, we should kind of carry on and, you know, hug much more closely the Tories' approach to things like public spending. I don't agree with that. But I would be being just dishonest with you if I said, do you know what, I think you can just print money to pay for things you want, because I don't. And it would be ripped apart as soon as if it became the official policy of the Labour Party, it would be ripped apart. And then we would not be able to win. We would not be able to do anything. So I think you can't have hope, false hope and false promise. We've got to be able to actually talk about the things that are credible. So I think we can do this in a respectful way. And actually we have. When we've had all the hustings debate, it's been hugely respectful and hugely honest. So I think you can have, within the Labour Party, we can have an honest debate about the things that we agree on and about the things that we disagree on. And similarly, look, you know, Andy and I have disagreed about actually what the approach should be about setting out the alternatives. And my question, you know, whether it was about the past and about, you know, what happened on Labour's record. And so I've said directly to all of the candidates, we have got to offer an alternative. And what the alternative that I want to offer is to be an alternative to the Tories, but actually it's also an alternative to Jeremy's approach, which I know has got a lot of support, but I just think it's not the right approach. And I think you can offer an alternative that is both radical and credible. And if we don't, actually we will let people down. Because if you think you've got to choose between your head and your heart, actually that's not going to work. Because with the Labour Party, we need both. Our whole purpose when we were founded was to put our principles into practice. It was to win with both our heads and our hearts. And that's what I strongly believe that we have to do. Now, just a question about, is Thatcher going to be a problem? So, I think I'm kind of quite different from her. I think, you know, we have had over 100 years of campaigning for women's equality. Margaret Thatcher didn't campaign for women's equality. She never stood up for it. She didn't do stuff that actually helped on women's equality at all. And I think there is so much more that we can do that is actually not just about women. It's actually about all of us. You know, when I talk about things like childcare, actually it's as much now in dad's interests as it is mum's interests. You know, the whole family is getting stretched and strained. So I think we can do that in a way that actually a lot of this is, you know, I mean, you know, coming from a Coalfield constituency, you know, as we'll know in terms of Pontefract, the damage that Margaret Thatcher did to Britain. But it also does remind me too, part of the reason she was able to do so much damage to Britain was because she won again and again and she stayed in power. And we in the Labour Party were just stuck in opposition. And being honest, opposition sucks. Mm-hmm. We can't change things for people, and we should be doing everything we can to fight against that.
Well, we've never sacked a Prime Minister.
That's true. And then a TTIP. So, look, the principle of trade is a good one, but we can't have our public services tied into it. We cannot have the National Health Service be tied into a trade deal with the US that involves US private companies somehow being able to trump our laws and our arrangements to support our public services that we believe in. But look, we've had other trade deals with other countries before, and they've not involved the public services and they've not involved the National Health Service. So that's why I think we have to argue for the principles of trade that help us get jobs, get investment that we need, but stand really firm against the encroachment into the public services and the dispute resolution system that's also caused the problem. And unless that is done, unless the public services and the National Health Service are taken out, we will just have to put a block on TTIP. It cannot go ahead as long as either public services or the NHS.
Okay, let's see.
So, start with the sure start and then the issues you have about the wider the coalition. Just as a brief on the sure start, I think we should actually be extending the sure start, both, you know, defending it against the scale of the 40% cuts, but actually extending it up the age range as well, because it's I had a woman who talked to me about she was about to lose her kids into care. She'd hit rock bottom. It really wasn't coping. Sure Start helped her rebuild her confidence, rebuild her family. She got her kids back, so the kids were out of care. Got her into a training course. Got her, doing part-time work. She then ended up being involved in the local Labour Party's campaign to stop the Sure Start closing. Actually, she ended up leading the local Labour Party's campaign to stop the Sure Start closing, which she was successful in. Then, of course, the local Labour Party, being the way that we are in the Labour Party, got her to Stanford Town Council. She is now a town councillor, and this autumn she starts her university degree. I mean, it's an amazing story, and it comes back to Sure Start. And that is what I think we should be extending across the country. And I think that is actually a radical approach to tackling poverty and disadvantage that happens so much, that you can root so much back to it. If things go wrong in the family at the start, then it can cause problems for generations to come. In terms of the wider thing, can you do this in terms of the wider coalition? I think, look, when we started, going back to the question about the Marxists and the Methodists and so on all coming together, at that point we did even do a deal with the Liberals. At that point, when we were first founded, I'm not sure there are many Liberals left right now to do a deal with. And I think our first thing has to be about rebuilding our party. And I do want us to just include far more people within it. I think the more that, in the end, our party itself is a coalition. And so I suppose it feels to me that what we should be trying to do is to make our party that broader coalition, rather than make our party narrower and simply do deals with other parties. That's the way I would like us to go. Of course, though, when you end up at local level in local councils, when you end up in terms of debates in Parliament, you also then end up working with the other parties that exist. But I think what I would like us to see is reach out and broaden our party rather than sort of give up on doing that in terms of what the way forward should be for us. Paul's question, this is really interesting. You are the first person to ask about this, and actually it's an incredibly important issue in all of the hustings and all of the debates and things that we have had. And I do agree with you. I think you have to find a way to deal with, especially it's this low-cost alcohol and some of the problems, the cut price deals and the way in which some of the supermarkets also end up doing the huge discounting and the loss leaders on them as well. What the challenge we've always had is, how do you find a way to do that without ending up putting up the price in the pubs for people who want to actually support our the pubs as a way of which people kind of socialise in the heart of the community. I think there is a way of doing that. We did come up with some proposals for that before the general election, and I think we should be continuing to pursue that. But there's also a wider issue about wider attitudes and education as well, and the kind of support and treatment that people get access to, which too often actually just isn't there at all. And when you think about drug addiction, actually has been shrunk back at the moment, just when actually it was making a difference, was really working in order to, to prevent the problems later on. And then Shazad's problem about equality of feminism. See, for me, feminism is about equality. It's not about just saying, like, here's what women should do. It's not about dividing women from men. And it's not actually dividing women from each other. It's actually about looking at all the wider aspects of equality. So, for example, when I was a health minister, many years ago, it was because of my sort of interest in feminism that I actually focused a lot on men and mental health problems, and the fact that you had so many suicides and much higher risk of suicide for men, and also much wider issues around men's health that weren't being talked about. So we had a lot of campaigns around breast cancer, around women's health and women's cancers, but actually very little to deal with men's health. And it was sort of, because women were actually more likely to come forward and do campaigns and to talk about health, but actually men weren't. And so you had that inequality and that kind of injustice as a result of that. So for me, this is actually about saying, I want young men to feel that they can use the F word just as confidently as young women can feel confident about using the F word, that we should all feel that this is actually about equality, for all of us. And it's why, too, we've been looking at some of the issues around for men and domestic violence and domestic abuse, because that is really stigmatising for young men to come forward. For young men who've been victims of child abuse, it can be really stigmatising to come forward, and we have got to have that support in place that understands that it can be more stigmatising. Doesn't just treat everybody as if they're the same, when actually the different cultural pressures and the different emotional pressures on people can have different consequences. So for me, feminism is about recognising that there are different pressures on people whether it's young men, whether it's young women, different consequences as a result, and thinking that you always got to believe in equality. You've always got to do everything you can, you know, to respond to that and to make sure that whoever it is, whatever their circumstance, whatever people's gender, whatever their sexuality, whatever their background, whatever their race, whatever their history, everybody should have that deep, equal respect. That's what I think we are in the Labour Party. That's the value that I will always champion.
We've got time for one more round of questions. And so there aren't enough minutes to take everybody. Can you make it a one-sentence question, not a statement, please? I'll take you in the front. I'll take you in the blue shirt there. And I'll take you.
OK, my name's Nick. I come over from Torbay. You're at the doorstep in 2020 as party leader. There's two people in front of you who migrated to UKIP and the Tories last time. What's going to make them come back?
The Westminster bubble is going to inflate itself in a short while. We're going to be treated to the spectacle of a large number of people who have served entirely their own satisfaction joining the House of Lords. Now, would you find that as odious a spectacle as I do, including the Labour nominees to that august institution, who've usually slagged off one candidate in the leader contest and are now tottering off into idyllic retirement now. From the food banks and the dole queues and the debt-laden student campuses, how do you think that is going to play?
Gerald Willis, I work in Plymouth. I just want to talk about Scotland, which may be a strange thing, but considering the Labour Party did so badly in Scotland up against the SNP, who were standing for anti-austerity, anti-Trident and so on, don't you think there's lessons to be learned? And I can't see anything from any other candidate other than Jeremy Corbyn who offers an alternative to the Tory light, which was an expression used a lot. I see a lot of things you're saying is still a little bit the same as it's always been, and people are looking for an alternative, and I don't think it's there.
Okay, so you start with those UKIP and Tory voters. And look, some of this is we have actually got to respond to the issues that people are worried about. Now, that might mean talking about immigration. And not being afraid to talk about immigration and being able to respond to people's concerns. Why I've talked a lot about that there is a genuine problem with the way in which immigration is exploited to undercut local wages and jobs. And if we don't talk about that, you know, it's only UKIP that's talking about that, but they talk about it in a divisive way, which is about blaming people and about building barriers with the whole of the rest of the world. Whereas what we think is you've got to deal with the exploitation. You know, you've got to stop the undercutting, which ends up exploiting those who come to work to support their families, exploiting those who are, who end up seeing their wages and jobs being affected, and also undermining other businesses that are being responsible because they end up with a bad deal as well. So I think there is it's possible for us to talk about a Labour way of responding to those sorts of concerns and tackling the exploitation as well. I think, though, whether it's UKIP voters, whether it's Tory voters, whether it is voters who may have people just decided not to vote. In the end, we've got to be confident enough to stand up against the politics of fear and blame, because I think that is what Tories and UKIP did. They played the politics of fear and blame. Actually, I think it's what the SNP often did as well, is play the politics of blame, to have somebody else to blame. It's harder for Labour because we want to be a progressive party. We can't play that politics of fear and blame. It's not what we believe in. It's not who we are. And it's not the kind of vision of the country that we need. But we've got to have enough confidence and optimism to drown out those voices of fear and division. And I think the practical things I want us to be offering, better jobs for the future. Credible, because it's got to be, if it's not credible, no one will believe it and no one will vote for it. And too often people didn't think we were credible enough at the last election. So you've got to be credible, but also optimistic enough to say, yep, here's where the new jobs and the good jobs are going to come from for the future, and here's how we're going to support families. The way I would pay for extending childcare and extending the universal childcare that I think we need, universal free childcare, is the married tax break, which basically says to single parent families, well, your family is just second class. I think it's wrong. So why don't we, it doesn't even reach most families, why don't we take that money and put that into extending free childcare? That, I think, is a fair thing to do. But that's a way of saying we support families, we'll support families, we'll stand up for communities and the better jobs in the future. That's what I think we can pull people behind. It's a question about the Westminster, the House of Lords. I mean, it's just shocking. David Cameron is talking about cutting the size of the House of Commons, forcing through his proposals there, which is basically just about Tory party political interests. It's not about anything that's really about democracy. At the same time, it's massively increasing the House of Lords, which is unelected, and, you know, without any reforms in place to do that, and hugely packing that, putting far more of his own party appointees in than any Prime Minister has previously done. I think it's not on. And I've said we should have a moratorium and have a freeze on the new appointments to the House of Lords, or a cap on the new appointments to the House of Lords until reform is properly underway. It's just crazy that we've just let this lapse and they're trying to fix the system. Let's have a proper constitutional convention that properly talks about radical reform to the House of Lords. Personally, I would make it a House of Leeds. Shift it out of Westminster altogether. I accept that might be contested and you might want it in Plymouth instead, but look, we can have that robust debate about its location. But let's get out of Parliament, out of London altogether, and really shake up the system. So many radical things we could do, but, you know, it does mean us being prepared to sort of to push for them rather than just swallow what the Tories say. Final point is, but, you know, what do we think in the end? What I think the SNP managed to do was, I don't think they were pushing socialism, they were pushing nationalism. Yeah. What they were doing was pushing a set of things which was all about being able to blame England, being able to divide us. And so, you know, if they were really cared about people, why would they be pushing for full fiscal autonomy, which actually would mean over £7 billion more cuts in Scotland? That isn't about supporting public services in Scotland. That isn't about supporting communities in Scotland. And it's not an alternative to austerity. Actually, it's pushing austerity far further. So, look, do people want an alternative to what the Tories are doing? Yeah, absolutely. And we have got to offer that. And that's why I've said really clearly, I will not go down the track of the 40% cuts that George Osborne wants to pursue. I think that was wrong. And I think it's his ideology that he doesn't believe in public services. He thinks public services make people dependent. We believe they make people independent, because it's the social care that helps you stay in your own home rather than have to go in an institution. It's the childcare that helps you go out to work rather than end up not being able to support your family. It's the things that make us, give us independence and opportunity. And we should stand up for that. So we should have that alternative, but it is a false alternative if you can't deliver it. It's not real if you can't actually afford it, or you can't, or you're printing money and making up money in order to pay for it, or if it's false alternative if you can't actually persuade other people to vote for it. And that, I suppose, comes back to what I think is in the end the crunch choice for all of us. And look, you've got your ballots in front of you now. You should be landing or about to land, and you've got them. But I think just, look, think really carefully, because the choice you make now will affect our chances of winning the next election and our chances of being able to stand up for people, or whether we say, basically, we're just going to hand over the next election to the Tories. We have got to offer an alternative, but it's also got to be a real one. It's got to be a credible one that we can actually deliver. Otherwise, it's just false hope and false promise. And I just can't bear for us to do that again. Mm. We did do that in the Thatcher years. And actually, it wasn't just what Thatcher did to Britain. It was actually what we did and let people down. We just can't do that again. Let's be strong enough about who we are, confident enough about our values, but also determined enough and hard-headed enough to make sure we can reach out and win with a Labour Party. That's what we have to do. Thank you.
Okay, so we're as good as our word. Journalists, do your stuff.